from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
They're probably Dutch, something like that. They were the guys that were doing all that kind of music back in the 90s with the crazy synth lines and everything. So
I just like how they make using a Billy Boy seem like a really good idea to awesome techno.
Well, it's just, yeah, she wants to have sex, but only with a condom. And to me, and before we go into this a little bit further, obviously, based on the opening song, this is our sex show.
You know what? Even before you keep going, like, here's the thing. You were talking last week, you're like, it's going to be the best show ever. Talk about going to the lowest common denominator.
Hey, why not?
You SOB.
Why not?
You played it cheap, man. I thought you were going to go all like, this is going to be the most educational, the most scientific, and then you just go for sex.
No, here's the thing. This is the way that I looked at it. Is I was like, you know what? This is going to be a different show. There's a different week, different host. I'm running the shit. And the way I look at it is like this. Normally shows are boring because you get to pick the boring topics. This or depressing as last week's show. So to cleanse our palate, now we get a show that we get to talk about sex. But we're not even really talking about sex because this show, we're going to be talking about people not having sex. And
talk about a bummer.
I know. I know. So let's get into it right away. Now, we're going to start off with talking about Mike Huckabee. Now, this is a twofer for Mike because he was on last week.
I have a feeling he's going to keep popping up until the elections are done, man.
Pretty much.
And hopefully not after.
And afterwards,
we're going to catch my drift.
If he wins, then Canada's going to get taken over and he's going to put the heel to our neck and stop us from saying bad things about him.
Well, not just that, man. He's going to put her heel to her neck for, gay marriages? Like, hello!
Everything else. But yeah, Mike Huckabee, this week, is in the news because he is actually against contraceptives, and he actually wants to ban different forms of contraceptives, such as the pill.
Well, he wants to make an amendment to the Constitution. Remember this? This guy was like, we're going to change the Constitution. Well, this is a prime example.
It's easier to change the Constitution than it is to change the Word of God.
The Word of a Living God.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You got to get that one right.
What's the difference between, I don't quite understand.
A Word of a Living God is like what he says is pretty much the Bible. Revealed, divine, revelation. That sounds circular, but whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty much, it has been brought to you, smack dab in your face. Bam, this is God's work. And the Constitution is apparently very, parochial.
Mm-hmm.
It's amusing, and it's an amusing little piece of paper.
Yeah.
That's not as powerful as the Word of a Living God.
So let's talk a little bit about the idea of contraception, such as the pill, actually being a form of abortion and therefore being bad. His argument is basically that because a pill can destroy a fertilized egg, and therefore it is a form of abortion, and therefore you got to side with life, and you just got to ban that. Thoughts?
Well, here's the funny thing. I mean, you want to call an abortionist a murderer. I got news for you guys. 50% of all pregnancies end up in, miscarriages, even before you know it. The biggest abortionist, that's God, people. So you want to go call him up and say, like, what the fuck, God? You've been killing all my babies. Like, you know, it just turns out that a lot of times, and we don't realize this because we don't see it, but a lot of times, I mean, pregnancies mess up. We're a species that needs to get it right. So it takes a few times, you know. It's not uncommon for people to have miscarriages. Certainly not uncommon for them to have it without even them knowing it, because it's just like after a day or two, bam, you know, it's just no good, gets rejected. And you ask anybody that's ever been pregnant. It's a tough thing. It's a tough. Your body wants to reject that thing. It's like there is a monster growing inside it. Get rid of it. So, you know, it just happens within our species. That's the honest truth of it. So to just suddenly say, well, the pill does it, therefore it's a form of abortion. I'm like, well, look at nature. Nature aborts a lot of its fucking mistakes. It just does that. That's what it does.
Yeah. Take a look at the reasons behind Huckabee's actions. Let's take a look at the general idea of why the right wing is so against abortion and what exactly are they trying to push through? Like, obviously, I understand the idea that basically the Republican Party, to a degree, is being hijacked by the religious right, religious fundamentalists.
Right.
So what exactly is the point of stop? Like, I can understand the idea of, say, you know, religious right being against, or just religious people in general being against abortion. But I don't quite understand the idea of religious people being against contraception.
Well, it's a really funny story because, you know, throughout the states, you've been seeing this and you've been hearing about it leaking, you know, through where pharmacists, for instance, or certain doctors are refusing to prescribe birth control because they're saying, well, it violates my religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about that is that their first duty is really as a doctor and not as a, you know, and not as a religious person, that this is a matter of health for these individuals.
Yeah.
And they're refusing to pretty much, well, in some cases, they're Hippocratic oath.
Yeah.
I would say hypocritic. Hippocratic oath. Though pharmacists don't have those necessarily, they're still supposed to provide at least that service. And, you know, okay, sure, I mean, you may not be all, you know, you may not be necessarily be happy about it, but it seems like when I heard that, I just thought that this is the resurrection of sort of like this whole huge debate. I mean, the debate was pretty silent for a while, you know, in the 90s. Nobody really, really talked about it. There were...
It seemed basically like the religious groups got the bitch slap from general society. They're basically,
well, they were crazy. They were bombing like clinics all the time. I mean, you're just not going to get a lot of fans when you do that.
Yeah,
that's what happened. That's why, like, pretty much they stayed dormant for 10 years waiting for people to forget
how crazy they are,
to forget how crazy,
to forget how far they'll go.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? What we're going to notice is that as soon as there's a large contingency, like a base of people that, you know, say that abortion is wrong, that base is what supports those few nuts that decide, well, you know what? I have this base of people supporting me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bomb this clinic. Woo!
Always taking it to the next level.
It's inevitable. I mean, if you have only 10 crazy people, or 10 people that believe in something crazy, the odds of like one of them doing something really nutty is pretty small. But if you have 100,000 people believing in something crazy, there will be a nut job in the woodworks that's going to just take it to that level where you're like, wow, that is messed up. That is freaking messed up. And that's just, you know, that's my fear. That's my fear. And the lines are just always being drawn. And you know what? It is the pro-life, quote-unquote, guys that are drawing that line pretty damn thick. And how are they drawing it? Bam, contraception is murder. Mm-hmm. So let's go back, 60 years. Get back in the, you know, hey woman, quit your bitching, get back in the kitchen and walk around barefoot and preggers. That's seems to be what they're really interested in. I don't know. That's just made up.
Now, let's take a look at this. I always figured the idea that, I mean, sure, you've got your religious fundamentalists who are really fighting against abortion, but then you've also got a contingency of people who just believe that abortion is wrong on a general moral standard. So I wanted to move along in the show and talk a little bit about abortion as a moral issue, you know, looking past. I mean, we all understand that abortion is a religious issue. I mean, there's no denying the fact that a lot of what's going on is being pushed by religion and religious groups. But let's take a look at the moral issue behind it and say, like, take a look at this. Let's look at this treatise, and then you can tell me what you think about it. Here, think about this. Let's put these arguments forward. A fetus is a member of the biological species Homo sapiens, a.k.a. a human being. To destroy a human being deliberately is unethical, as in because that's murder. Therefore, abortion is unethical, since it constitutes the deliberate destruction of a human being. That is apparently the standard moral quagmire of abortion. Now, I want you to tell me what's wrong with that.
You want me to break it down?
Sure.
Okay, well, the way that I break it down is, first of all, in the first treatise, the fact that a fetus is a member of the biological species Homo sapien, at the same time, you have to kind of like examine, how do you define what makes you part of the biological family? Is a skin cell of mine part of the biological family? If I don't know, if I masturbate, am I essentially committing genocide? You know what I mean? Am I killing millions of, potential human beings? I mean, you have to look at the fetus in its very early developments. In the early developments, it is indistinguishable from just a mass of just cells. That's all it is. It's just, and the cells are unspecified. They're stem cells, right? Now, if you look at a bunch of stem cells, can you make the difference between that, a pig embryo, an alligator? You can't make that difference. And for all intents and purposes, sure, it's a potential human, but it's the same potential human that my sperm or that a woman's egg is, just with a little bit more chromosomes, and just things are happening.
But then you could probably use that same argument to say that a one-year-old baby is you know, just on its way to becoming something as full of potential as, say, you have become.
Well, we draw that line, and when they try to figure out that line of when they would say, this is the trimester in which you are no longer allowed to have an abortion, the way they figured it is when the lungs, you know, are able to kind of like function. Because the idea was that if it can breathe on its own, then, or, I mean, in a very general way, right? Mm-hmm. If it's developed at least in such a way that it is both recognizable as a human being, that it possesses all of the functions of a human being, as in beating heart, working lungs, that kind of stuff, and it doesn't necessarily have to be every element that's working, like, you know, maybe the kidneys and the spleen and that kind of stuff, they develop a lot later on. The esophagus, the stomach, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So they said, well, when those elements that make us human are clearly defined, at least, even though there may not necessarily be that much brain activity or even any brain activity at all, you draw that line here because now you're like, well, this is now building towards a human being. Its humanness is a lot more recognizable.
Mm-hmm. So you're just saying because at this point it now looks cute in the in that little image or projector thing.
Well, it doesn't even look like anything really. Even in at that point, it doesn't. A lot of times, I mean, it doesn't look that different from a monkey embryo or anything else. It's not just because it looks cute and it's sucking its thumb. This is not the stage in which you're still allowed to have an abortion here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is. There's. I think. What was the amount of weeks again? Forget how many, but it is quite substantial. Like, mm-hmm. it's. I think it's 8 weeks. I think 8 weeks is that limit, and 8 weeks just happens also to be the time where, you know, brain activity starts. But it's also very crude brain activity. So my breaking this down, at least for the first part, is just saying you can easily say that a fetus is part of the biological species, but how do you define how someone is part of that? And if it's just a bunch of cells, like, you know, is every time I comb my hair, am I, you know, like, am I killing a whole bunch of people? This is still part of the biological species. No,
yeah, but that's
we create
not
that divide.
These hairs aren't living things.
But they could. They.
I mean, it is more apt
skin
to
cells,
talk about
skin
say
cells are living.
Sperm, because at the very least, sperm is actually living, and they are, you know,
they're not by any
little things.
No, but that's the thing. They're not sentient. They're not classified as a living entity because it's just. I mean, it's not even full. All your chromosomes. It's only half of them. You know, and sure, you could just go around saying, well, this is the potential for human life. But, I mean, again, like I said, most, you know, about half of all pregnancies end in abortions anyways. Lots of those times, those clusters of cells are damaged, no good, problematic.
Okay, here's an argument for you then that I'm interested in knowing. So you're basically saying, I mean, we all know the general idea of, you know, up to a certain point, it's generally recognized that a fetus isn't a human being until, you know, that X point where we're saying that, you know, lungs and this and that. But even then, the brain functionality isn't really there or anything like that to really say that this here is a human. Now, if we want to go further and just say, listen, on a completely logical scale, if you're going to take a look at when we want to define a human being as a human being, you'd probably be able to push that abortion date way further up towards when the baby is born and say, this is actually all right. So my question to you is this. Did you guys, the logical, you know, fetus is not a person, did you slide that scale all the way back just so it wouldn't seem so barbaric?
Yes, absolutely. There is a rationale to it. The whole idea is not to be logical about picking a point in time when a baby becomes a fetus. The idea is merely this, of saying, let's provide the you know, let's keep that thing fuzzy. You know, it uses basically what you call fuzzy logic,
mm-hmm.
of saying, you know, fuzzy logic, things are not black and white. They are between 1 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, at what point does a fetus come closer to 10? What point is it closer to 1?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that most of the, you know, pro-life guys is that they don't know. Well, they know. They don't know. They don't accept fuzzy logic. Everything is black or white. Mm-hmm. You are human or you are not human. And that doesn't make sense in our world. We understand. We recognize that there's fuzzy logic in absolutely everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is the one issue in which, you know, like, I'm not going to budge on this. I mean, ironically enough, these are the same people that don't budge on killing someone who, you know, murdered someone else. Apparently, that's, you know, not in that. It doesn't classify.
Not in the same sphere.
So, I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
But again,
we're not looking at
it. I don't want to focus on that,
moral,
but I want to move to the second
moral
point. The to destroy a human being deliberately is unethical and therefore murder. Mm-hmm. Right? I want to focus on this one next. And the reason I want to focus on it next is that because this is now a contextual issue. Because now when you define something and you just suddenly put that label murder,
mm-hmm.
now it means something different. If I were to say the deliberate destruction is killing, well, then I can't use the third part, which is saying, well, all killing is unethical, because we know that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because some killing isn't unethical. Somebody's trying to kill your, you know, family. You kill them. Is someone going to go over and be like, what the hell, dude? Mm-hmm. Killing a human life is no good. I'm like, we live in a world of, you know, tooth and nail. Or what's it? Claw, tooth and nail, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's a brutal reality out there. You look at most species tearing each other apart. You know, you ever see those Japanese wasps tearing up an entire hive of bees and ripping them apart? Yeah, this is nature. This is real life out there.
Yeah.
We are lucky enough that we don't have to deal with that kind of stuff, but we recognize that sometimes the death of something is inevitable, and that something may be a human being. So to just label it as murder is now, you're putting a huge context of that and saying, in all instances, it is wrong. And you're not going to find one person that's going to be able to back that up, because there will always be that fuzzy logic.
You know what's funny is that you just justified people who hate abortion murdering abortion doctors.
What do you mean?
Okay, well, their argument is always that they are murdering people who are murdering babies. Therefore, they are doing things in the name of self-defense for these children.
Well, again, I mean, this is a matter of fuzzy logic, right?
Yeah.
Let's imagine that, yes, we do define at some point fetuses as life, right? We can't give it either a 10 or a 1. We can look in the middle. Maybe for him it's like a 2,
mm-hmm.
right? Perhaps not everyone is comfortable with it. Maybe there is some fuzziness to the actual issue, but he's not going out and he's not, you know, destroying a functional, sentient human being. He's essentially destroying the potential for one.
You're saying, when you're talking about murdering people, and you're saying that sometimes you got to kill somebody who's coming to kill your family. Now take a look at the idea of this person saying, you know what, you know, these people, as you say, they look very black and white on the fact that a fetus is a human being, that therefore just as valuable as any other human being that's already walking around out there. Now he takes a look at this human being that's walking around who is actually actively murdering unborn babies on a daily basis. Now he's going to say that this person is just as deserving of death as somebody who is, say, attacking his family with a machete or with a gun or whatever else like that.
No, but then again, that becomes really fuzzy, because where's the danger really coming from here? Like, you know, are they in immediate danger? When I talk about the ability to defend yourself, mm-hmm. right? This is when a person is deliberately attacking you and you have no recourse but to act. And again, on that fuzzy scale,
I know, but
you're not going to be able to say you were 100% right and you should have killed that man. We recognize the fact that the destruction of this human being, even though this person was a criminal, isn't the best thing, isn't the best possible outcome. There is still some fuzziness. You will still probably go to jail, or mm-hmm. at least you will do some time. And people have to understand that there are consequences to your actions. But that slides along a certain scale here, because you're more likely to be in the right of having attacked someone who is trying to kill you and your family, who, by the way, are sentient human beings that can decide for themselves how to live their lives,
mm-hmm.
to something that is really just a cluster of cells. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, folks, but it really, when it boils down to it, that is what it is. By the time that it is aborted, it is merely the potential, the possibility of a human being. But just like any of your cell could potentially be a human being, were you to have cloning, available, mm-hmm. every cell in your body would have that same potential as even just a growing fetus. You wouldn't suddenly say, well, don't, wash your hands because you're flushing all this potential life down the toilet. The way that potential life works is something that is going to definitely change the way that is defined. Mm-hmm. And if we continue to work along these black or white, yes or no, as opposed to this fuzzy logic, we are in serious freaking trouble.
You know what? I'll tell you, I completely agree with a lot of your arguments, but I say, like, the big weakness in your argument, and I got to say, this is really the one thing that really turns me off, is where you're trying to compare, or you're trying to say, oh, you know, fetuses, da-da-da, so, you know, skin or hair, blah, blah, blah. It's like trying to make a comparison like that just makes you sound like an asshole.
Well, I admit I don't exactly sound like Mr. Nice Guy, but again, I mean, the fuzziness, the humanness of a fetus changes as it progresses, and we admit that. There is a certain point where you're suddenly saying it's too fuzzy, it's too unclear. we will not be allowed to perform an abortion, specifically because if the fetus falls within that zone where of humanness,
yeah.
that we are not comfortable
and we've got general,
aborting.
We've got general society that's the whole, you know, through scientific method have put it at a rather arbitrary rate that's far enough back along the scale to take away a lot of the sting of, you know, oh, it's, you know, that thing with the...
Yeah, a lot of the questions of you saying, like, well, they're erring on the side
of caution. Exactly. And basically what's happening is you got a lot of religious people who are basically pushing it, trying to push it further back on the grounds of their religious conviction.
Well, they want to put it at that miracle moment where the egg enters the sperm, all of a sudden they're like, bam, you're protected. And those same guys, they want to be like, you're protected by the Constitution now, too. Boom. And anybody who violates that is going to do jail time and so on and so forth. At the expense, essentially what they would do is they would create small little prisons within the womb, where the carrier of babies would essentially be, you know, prisoners of their own bodies.
Yeah, where the rights of the fetus outweigh the rights of the...
individual who's having that fetus.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the problem with that fetus might be.
And that slides us right into our next topic, which is... everything surrounding all these people who are getting abortions, and that's teenagers who don't know what they're doing.
Now, you read a bit of the statistics of what, like the abortion statistic. What was it that you had found?
It was four out of ten girls have a pregnancy before they are the age of 20. So as to what they do with those pregnancies, as to what happens with them, whether or not they, you know, like, belly flop in the pool and have a little abortion, or
belly flop in the pool.
I don't know. I was gonna say like
I was gonna.
Fall
I was expecting some
stairs.
Kind of coat hanger joke, and I was gonna be like, press the mute button.
No, none of that.
Okay,
but,
all right, that's good.
But yeah, whether or not they keep it, or whether or not it goes away when they go down on a trip or whatever else, it's regardless. But yeah, the official statistic is
Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Is 4 out of 10 now. One of the big things that's been going on right now is that George Bush has been pushing abstinence like crazy. Now, he doubled the amount of money going to abstinence a couple years back, and then he doubled it again last year. It's up to like $230 million in abstinence funding going to states. And here's the thing that peeves me off, because you know what? Not as stupid as I think abstinence is, because I don't think, you know, the idea of selling people on the idea of not being slutty and not having lots of sex with everybody, I think that's, you know, a good lesson to learn. I think especially when you've got television telling kids to go stick it in, you're doing this, and if you're not, it's bad,
dirty.
You're a loser.
You're a loser for not having sex, loser.
Exactly. I think there's got to be, you know, a reasonable other end where it says, you know what, you don't have to be going out there doing everything that moves. But
you don't?
No. I think this is a message that has to be sent to people, because, but at the same time, here's the problem with this abstinence-only funding, is that to get the money... they have to teach. The state has to agree to teach abstinence and only abstinence. That means no contraceptives, none.
That's fun.
It's insane.
It's really absolutely insane.
And this is why 15 states have rejected the abstinence-only funding. And what sucks about this?
That's only 15 of 50.
It's only 15. But the other thing about it is, even with these 15, it was a symbolic rejection. They're not, because what happens is the money doesn't actually go to. Doesn't actually go to them. It goes to abstinence groups, you know, groups that go around teaching this stuff.
I wonder what kind of groups these are.
We'll talk about that in a little bit there. So, but I guess what I really want to talk about now is the idea of how well abstinence teaching works. And I'd just like to let you get off on it a little bit and tell me
get
what
off
you...
on it. I like that.
No,
segue.
No getting off.
Oh,
it's abstinence.
Well, I don't have the statistics with me, but I will tell you a couple interesting facts about abstinence only teaching. Now, there does seem to suggest that there is evidence that, for states that have abstinence only teaching, that there is a slightly lower percentage of intercourse, but only intercourse with the vagina. There is a 3 times more likelihood of intercourse, anal intercourse, which is not generally considered by some of these people as being sex at all. There's also higher instances of oral sex.
Which states are these?
It wasn't my state. What's,
it's like I'm planning my vacation now. Gonna go to one of those mouth and butt states.
One after another, yeah. But I think what's really more interesting with that is that I was reading the book called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, and what he was talking about was trying to get kids to stop smoking. And trying to get kids to stop smoking and getting them to stop having sex is kind of like the same battle, right? Mm-hmm. It's a losing battle. No one's winning it. And a lot of people are just sort of like dumping money into programs they think that will make a difference. Now, maybe some abstinence program have like, you know, the best interest of the kids at heart. They figure, well, teen pregnancy is really high in certain states among certain, groups, and it's important for them to sort of like try to reach out there and make them change their opinion. But when you consider the strength and, of the opinion of, say, an adult to those of their peers, it is like dropping, a tiny bit of chlorine in a giant pool. You're not going to clean it up. Mm. In reality, I mean, if people wanted to really create more awareness and more intelligent kids about sex, education definitely is a good point. But you have to figure out that the best people to get on your side are actually those people that kids look up to. And those kids are never going to teach other kids about abstinence. It's not likely. Sex is just too good. It really is.
You're talking about smoking being a battle you can't win. Smoking isn't something that is ingrained in your brain through millions and millions of years of evolution.
No, smoking is kind of like the new cat in town.
Yeah.
The old one is
smoking is just peer pressure. Sex is peer pressure plus throbbing biological urges.
Well, you know, the other interesting reason as to why programs that taught sex had higher instances of sex, at least like
taught abstinence, you mean?
No, taught regular sex education. The reason there was a higher percentage of kids that engaged in sex. Again, these percentages aren't that, different. They're still slightly higher. But what they found was that significantly more used protection, significantly more had fewer sexual partners, and significantly more had less STDs. So human beings, when you tell them something, if I was to tell you about this new drug that I just heard about, for me telling you, you may be likely to try it.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell you and I tell you all about it, possible side effects, the effects on you, you might try it, but you would try less and you wouldn't try to a point where it became destructive. And that essentially is the problem. When you don't give the proper information, like most abstinence programs teach them that condom use is really ineffectual to prevent pregnancy. So in their minds, they're like, well, screw it. I'll go bareback. It's got the same rate of failure. And it's so much disinformation and misinformation that they're actually making the situation worse by not treating these children or these adolescents enough as adults to make their own decisions. And you can't make people's minds up for them. You just can't. Their minds will be made up. And it's probably going to go the direction of like, oh my God, that feels so good.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, what I found, my big issue with abstinence funding or with basically teaching only abstinence is it's scare tactics. What you do is they go in there and they say, hey, take a look at these huge posters of warts on penises and stuff like that, and all sorts of messed up stuff. And what I really love is the fact that you show these kids these STDs, and it gives them the idea of imagining that they can see it, that they go and they're going to have a sex partner and they're going to take a look at the guy's penis, and so long as it's not bright purple with gigantic light and with yellow pus coming out the nose, then that the guy is healthy.
And you call it a nose? I think that you went to an abstinence only school there, buddy. The nose. Ay, ay, ay.
But I mean, it's such impractical information. It's such scare tactics. And like Jake said, it's basically you got kids who are lasting, and the actual number here is that they're delaying having sex an average of 18 months longer than other teens who are being taught comprehensive sex education, but they are also less likely to actually use birth control, because basically when you're going into the idea of abstinence, you're not preparing yourself to have safe sex. I carry around a condom at all times, and you know what? Sex is the last thing on my mind at the moment, but I keep it on me at all times because God, you never know when something might come up. And you got to think of it like this when you're a teenager. It's like, man, sometimes those urges just go out of control. And let me tell you, when I was a teenager, I had my share of of urges out of control. And I used to think that not being prepared was the best way to keep me from having sex. And let me tell you,
it's quite the opposite.
It's quite the opposite.
Look, it's just like that example. Remember a few months back, I was on this date, went with this girl, and it turns out that there's a certain amount of time that I keep a condom on my wall, because even wallet condoms are just not something you want to use unless it's an emergency, right? So date goes really well. Go back
wallet,
to her
wallet
place.
Wallet condoms aren't the things you
wallet
want.
Wallet condom is gone. And, you know, things are going really well. And all of a sudden, you know, it's go time. Even before I knew it. And, you know, here she is, like, just pouncing on me. And the sad realization that there is no protection. And, yeah, that's how my night ended.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times.
Well, you are a stronger man than I am.
I know. I am a much stronger man than you. But is that
because you had better sex education? I'm trying to remember my sex education. I think it was pretty terrible. As I said, they showed just these gigantic pictures of brown things and green things and red things.
Remember. I just, you know what? I got a book called The Art of Lovemaking Before Having Sex. So, yeah, I was pretty stoked.
You were probably like 22.
Yeah. Shut your mouth. I was not 22, you
okay.
Douchebag.
Now, let's wrap this up. Let's talk a little bit about where this money is going. Because basically what it turns out with this abstinence funding is that it's going to, guess what? Big surprise. I really want to put it out there. I know... From more and more conversations with Americans, that there are a lot of Americans out there who are right wing, have nothing to do with the religious right, fundamentalists, everything like this. So whenever I keep on just throwing out right wing, I'm working hard to make a distinction and to stop lumping everybody together.
Well, it's like, you know, for instance, there are Muslims that don't believe in the Islam. So it's kind of like that, you know, that sticky point where we're always just saying, we're just calling them all Muslims, but that's not true. Mm. They're Islamists. You know what I mean?
But just as, I mean, so yeah, but back on to what I'm saying here is that all the money's going to these religious fundamentalist groups that are going out there, and basically what they're doing is these are groups like Youth for Christ, which go out and give pep talks to the kids, and they try and be all cool, and like, hey, guess what? No sex, yeah.
Super duper!
This is the really disgusting one that I find, is that there are clinics that are set up, which basically masquerade as...
health clinics?
As crisis clinics. Basically, you find out you're pregnant, that you might be pregnant, you go to these crisis clinics. And these crisis clinics are run by people who basically try to bamboozle you into not having an abortion or even considering an abortion, and so on and so forth. And basically getting the word out, like, it's to keep these things from being a secret that a person can just get rid of it with, you know? Because obviously you're much less likely to have an abortion if everybody already knows you're pregnant, because of course there's a stigma attached to murdering your baby.
When you put it that way.
you know, it's society. I mean, as I said, four out of 10 girls are going to get pregnant before they're 20.
Well, that's a statistic from the U.S. That's not the rest of the world does not have that same statistic, my friend. Mm. And I can guarantee you that, just for the simple reason that most other countries just have sex education.
I know, but I will guarantee you that you know girls who have had abortions who just is completely verboten and no one speaks.
Oh,
about
I know it. I just can't tell you who.
I don't know. I know, but there are people that you know that you don't know about, and they're not going to tell anybody, because if that stuff had gotten out, it would be devastating to them. It would, you know.
But that's again. I mean, like that's part of the sad truth, and the sad truth is that we've associated a lot of these concepts of murder, you know, and violence and harm to human beings with, you know, the act of abortion, as this is the worst thing that a person could ever do. And, you know, for me, like, I believe in the power to choose for yourself what your own destiny is, to not suddenly be locked in to an 18-year contract simply because a cluster of cell is developing in your womb. I'm sorry. I'm just not. I. You know, you can go and say, "Well, life begins and life is sacred." I mean, at the same time, for most of us, life is pretty fucking cheap. You know, the same people that are probably going to tell you that life is sacred are the ones that don't give a rat's ass that 25,000 kids are dying of starvation right now, or that they're dropping bombs on people and ruining their lives and making a living hell, or just killing people. Somehow, this all gets really muddied because we're talking about babies. And for when you say the word, it creates powerful emotional responses in us. And I have to tell you, people,
these are biological responses. Yes. Just as powerful as the biological urges to get down and dirty.
And the problem with that is that anytime biological urge like that comes in, logic gets thrown right out the window. It doesn't, you know, and you're not going to be reasonable. Nobody makes reasonable decisions under those circumstances. And that's really the shame. We can't continue to make decisions that are not reasonable. Just letting your emotions decide for you is a mistake. Okay, no, that's it. That is. No more emotions. Keep things reasonable.
You know what? There was another group that tried to just do things logically.
I didn't
with
say
no
logical.
Emotion.
I said reasonable.
Okay.
Reasonable is trying to find a middle ground.
You're ruining my Nazi association here, buddy.
Besides, that wasn't logical at all. It was logically consistent in their own made-up universe, but it wasn't exactly like this is the culmination of all logical things. Are you kidding me? Do you ever see those rallies on TV? I don't think they were emotionless. This is a situation in which there's a high degree of emotions, and the whole stuff that I was talking about with Mike Huckabee and why that resembles fascism has a lot to do with the fact that they use powerful emotional concepts and they bogart them. They take them for themselves and they're like, we're going to use this whatever way we want, and if we can control the meaning of words, if you control the meaning of word freedom, life, murder, you basically can run the world on if you control these concepts, because the reactions that you will have from human beings, you know, you'll be able to control them indefinitely just from controlling concepts. And that's what, you know, the religious right does, particularly with the issue of abortion. They bogart those concepts and we become enslaved to their attack, them trying to force us to view things their way. They're not pro-choice in the way that they allow us to choose for ourselves how to live our lives. They don't give us that choice. They take that choice away. Mm-hmm. They should be called pro-non-choice.
Well, there's a reason that they're called pro-life, because it's just this...
it sounds good.
It's just the snappiest pro-choice. Well, I gotta say, like, the people who marketed and brought up this whole debate, you got some damn good encompassing names. And that's why this debate is so lively, is because, you know, on both sides, there is an endless circle. Like the debate on abortion is just like pie. It has no end. It just keeps going, and there's no pattern to it. So you can always attack it from different angles, and there's always new stories coming up. And that's why I find it absolutely so fascinating. See, even though, like, to me, it seems like the most obvious answer, which is you got to give people the right to choose, and that's all there is to it.
And then you protect... You know, you protect human beings when they become essentially recognizable as such, when their level of humanness is such that we can no longer deny the fact that they are now part of the human family. Mm. And, you know, then initiate any protection that you can. That's definitely, you know, that's definitely a good idea, which is why I'm like, well, you're 7 months pregnant. Get rid of the thing. It's fine. It's not even breathing on its own. Actually, I think it is. Shut your mouth. It's time to murder babies.
Very nice.
That's how we're portrayed, really. Yeah. Pro-choice people, baby murderers.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's like everybody's having a great big party down at the abortion clinic, and we all want to have them. We're just lining up.
I can't wait for
abortion. Abortions are cheaper than condoms. So? Why not?
Yeah, that'll be the day. Yeah. It's like, remember, you ever see that Simpsons episode where it's... those two aliens that come to the planet are trying to run for president, and he's like, abortions for all. And they're like, boo. Abortions for none. And they're like, boo. Abortion for some, miniature American flags for others. That's how you'll keep that debate swinging. Be like, as soon as somebody gets a little hardcore, you basically just play, you know, the national anthem, and you give them a tiny little flag, and they'll just forget about it.
Exactly.
All right, we're wrapping up the show now.
Yes, my show.
Your
everybody,
show.
What did you think, Jake? Did I not kick your butt?
Did you kick my butt? Well, I think that if you look, I actually probably talked longer than you did.
Hey, here's the thing. I wasn't trying to be Mr. Blah, 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 talk all the time.
Okay, okay.
I was just putting together an entertaining show that didn't have anything to do with demon children from Africa or crying about things, blah, 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 or just, you know, recycling boring standard atheist arguments. I thought we would have a fun debate about the morality beyond abstinence and abortion.
Well, I'm glad I lit the fire under your ass, because you hyped it up enough so that you had to make it good.
And I want everybody who listens to this show that wants me to put together my own show once in a while to speak up and let it be known.
Okay. The go to www.thegoodatheist.net and cast your votes now.
Post in the comments. Tell them what you thought. Tell them that I am the man, and tell them you love erotic